Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to Lore Watch, a roundtable freeform discussion about lore and the games of Blizzard Entertainment. I'm Anne Stickney, one of two lore-focused writers over at Blizzard Watch, and I've got both of my wonderful co-hosts with me today. First up, I introduced him second last time, and it was kind of awkward, so I'm going to introduce him first this time. Hey, Joe Perez.
Hey, everybody. How's it going today?
It's going. It's going a little better than it was last time, so there you go.
You know, I'm not fighting DDoS attacks today, so it is a very good day in my world as well.
Hey, that works. I can see things, so that's a bonus, too. It's been a week of bonuses, I guess. I don't know. Speaking of bonuses, we've got our extra special. He's always extra special. Other co-host, and that would be Matt Rossi. Hey, Rossi.
Yeah, hello.
Okay, that wasn't quite the special I was looking for, but I'll take it.
What's wrong with yellow? That's an old one. I'm ancient. I used to drink Mellow Yellow. That's
I was just
going to
say, that made me think of the Mellow Yellow commercials.
Yeah.
What's Mellow Yellow?
It's like Mountain Dew.
It was like a Coke branded Mountain Dew, but it was, I don't know why they decided to market their weird energy drink as being mellow. Like, that's not what you drink super high caffeine drinks for. Oh. I can't imagine him going, I need to smooth out. I'd better ingest an entire liter of caffeine.
Well, was the taste a mellow sort of taste? Or
It was basically exactly Mountain Dew.
It was, yeah. Okay, all right, well. Was,
if anything, a little sharper, and you know how when you first, for the first time you drank Mountain Dew, there's that like kind of bitter, whoa, what is that to it? It was like all bitter, whoa, what is that?
That there sounds no like after- Fresca or grapefruit, anything. Really?
This wasn't like Fresca. This was very much more like a hand reaching into your mouth to grab your tongue and squeeze it until you said, please!
Right, so this podcast isn't about soda, so we're just going to move on.
if you want to know what Goldon is getting you to drink, it's basically Mellow Yellow.
Yes, exactly.
Mellow Yellow.
Exactly.
That's why nobody wants it, I guess. It's like,
I don't want an evil tongue grabbing my food.
Goldon needs a better marketing department. That's all it boils down to. Like,
yeah. Drink. Yeah, because let's face it, everything really isn't the best tagline.
Drink this. Drink. It will taste like a demon's hand grabbing your tongue. I don't want that. Well, you
but
will.
I don't want it. Okay. So this week, we covered...
Give it to Mikey. He'll drink anything.
Mikey likes it. Anyway, this week... Well, last time we were here, we talked about Overwatch, which was super fun, and I had a lot of interesting theories kind of pop up from that, and that's sort of leeching into my Know Your Lore column. So thanks, guys. This week, however, we had kind of a buildup of emails again, Lorewatch emails. So I figured we'd go ahead and address at least a few of those, and see where the conversation takes us, because as we know on this show, it kind of goes all over the place. If you do have an email for Lorewatch, any lore question about any of Blizzard's game titles, we'll pretty much answer just about anything. You can email that to podcast@blizzardwatch.com and just make sure that you put Lore Watch in the subject line so that we know that it's intended for this podcast and not the other one that we do, which we also like questions for. Please try to keep your questions to a fairly minimal length because we don't want to read a novel on the show. Thank you. All right. So we've got kind of a theme going on with some of these. The first couple, I put the first couple in there just to put the first couple in there, you guys. But then as we go on, we start getting more of a concentrated kind of theme thing going on with these emails. Anyway, so first one that we've got here is from Captain Krogan, Torin Rhett Paladin from Alaria, U.S., who I guess isn't a Krogan at all. Who says, greetings, oh Winterstorm observers. Listening to your podcasts and Lore Watches and stuffs, a thought occurred to me. Have we ever witnessed Khadgar and Rathian interact with each other? Is there a connection there? Because Khadgar seems to be giving us the same go-get-me-some powerful junk quests that Rathian gave us all through Mists of Pandaria. Seems suspicious to me. There is a second question here, but let's talk about the first one first.
Well, I did see Khadgar with a pair of glasses on that one time. And when he took them off, he did look an awful lot like Rathian. So I'm not saying... No, no. Seriously. Everybody gives you those go-get-me-powerful-junk quests. That's a
that's
wow
how
thing.
You get that, that's how you get the powerful junk. Somebody sends you to go get it.
I mean, let's also be honest. We're carrying powerful junk at this point, too. Like, it's...
We're carting it around and, like, smacking things with it.
Yep.
I'm at the point where I have, like, a weapon of awesome power and then another couple of weapons of awesome power that I have for, like, when I feel like doing things differently. Like, I could use this this gigantic sword of Cataclysmic Might or the two other awesome swords of Cataclysmic Might. Or then there's the shield and sword of... Yeah, I have options. So, yeah, it's like you're a walking ironmongery at this point. Or, you know, if you're a shaman, whatever you're using. Or if so have you. Everybody has their various... doodads of ridiculous power.
Yeah, and the thing about why we haven't seen them talk to each other, it's mostly because, well, a couple reasons. One, they've been doing completely different things at different times. Like, Rathian was our central, I don't want to say a motivator, but he was the one feeding us all the information and mop to get us to go and do what we need to do, and then we kind of disappeared and went to go do other things with...
I'm sorry, wait, hold up. Back it up. Back it up just a little. Did you just call it mop?
Yes.
No. It's Mists, Joe. Just call it Mists. Mists of Pandaria.
Oh,
we're okay with
fine.
That. We're not okay with mop here. This is a mop-free podcast. All right.
All right. Stanley Duzowski is going to be very, very disappointed. Okay, so Mists, he was basically our main motivator of like, okay, well, we need this. Well, we need that. I need this. Well, you're going to go get me the heart of this person, and I'm going to go consume it. And then he disappeared to go do dragon things. And then after that, we went to go fight against warlords in another far-off land of not involving Rathian, because he really didn't have a stake in that one. Not really.
Although there is certainly a clue that he was there.
Yes. He may have went and saw what was going on, but whatever his motivations were, it did not involve the players. And then come to the current, and the interesting thing is, I believe there may have at one point been planned interaction.
Oh, yeah, it was.
Because
in the beta,
it was, if any, at this point, I don't think it's any spoilers for anybody. If it is, I'm sorry, but Ebonhorn is a black dragon. If it wasn't apparent throughout all of that, and he is Rathian's brother thing, I guess. Originally that was Rathian. Like that was that whole quest line was Rathian getting you to do that type of stuff. So I don't know why they pulled Rathian out and made it a different character at the last minute. I don't know if there's plans for him later on, but I don't think it's because he's Dadgar. I think it's more that he's doing other dragon things that we don't know yet.
I think it's because they couldn't actually finish the story in time for that particular zone with Rathian. Like they weren't happy with the direction it was going, or at least that's the impression that I get. So they stuck in somebody else entirely random. And that's not interesting. Give me Rathian. Hello. Like the whole reason he was having us do all this fetch stuff to get him the powerful junk in Mists of Pandaria was because of the event that we're currently playing through right now. He had a vision. He had a vision about the Legion coming back. He was trying to manipulate us so that we'd be like the most powerful forces that we could be in order to fight the Legion. And now he's just absent.
Well,
he's just gone. Where did he go?
But I would argue that it is interesting that there is a second uncorrupted black dragon that's out there in the world pulling strings.
Yeah, but I don't care.
Wow, harsh.
I'm not even, like, remotely emotionally invested in Ebonhorn at all. Like, not even a little. I don't care about him. Rathion, on the other hand, has had this buildup since the end of Cataclysm, where rogues first encountered him as part of that legendary quest chain. And even before that, because we were kind of the reason that he came into existence in the first mm-hmm. place, if you play through the leveling quests in the Badlands. So we have this, like, vested interest in this black dragon. It's been built. It's been built over time. You can't just, like, slap in a Torin and say, oh, yeah, he was a dragon all along, and expect me to be really involved with that. I'm not. I don't care. These guys were isolated for 10,000 years. Meanwhile, this other little punk has been directly involved in everything that we've been doing for the past, what, 3-4 years? Something like that? There's been all the buildup. Where is the payoff? I want the payoff. However,
I'm not tremendously invested in either of these characters. So I am. Going, I got no fight. You guys do what you want. I will say this, though. We do have a lot more expansion to go. And we're going to see Nighthold is coming up in 7.15. 7.2 is the actual Temple of Sargeras. If I were a betting man, and I'm not because I have no money, but if I were a betting man, I would put Rathion's possible involvement in this expansion to be in 7.2.
With the Tomb of Sargeras?
Yeah. You got the not just the Tomb of Sargeras. They're going to bring back the demon invasions, but put them on the Broken Isles instead.
That's right.
And that's a whole... The whole ramp up to the assault on the temple is a kind of zone defense option where you're trying to keep the Legion contained while you get your forces ready. That seems to me like, you know, the kind of time that Rathion would stick his nose in. Because remember, Rathion's kind of responsible for Warlords.
He did it on purpose.
Yeah, he played around with the whole, you know, Kairos deal. He helped that guy out for reasons of his own that we don't know. But he did. He helped that guy out. And you remember, too, if you were playing, like, in Mists of Pandaria, Rathion wanted the Horde Alliance conflict to come to a head and for there to be a victor. And, I mean, I didn't do the, you know, Siege of Orgrimmar on Horde side, so I don't know how that worked out. But, Joe, did you?
I don't think it really played out much differently.
Well, because of the Alliance side, you go talk to Rathion, and he says, yeah, what is wrong with you people? I wanted, you know, Varian to kill, you know, to basically conquer the Horde. So it was taken about a year.
On the Horde side, he says much the same thing, and then he has kind of a throwaway line where he goes, yes, I know, I'm sorry, I wanted you guys beaten, but look, it's the only way for you guys to unite. One side has to conquer, the other one has to fall in line, and then everybody together can fight this menace. Like, so and basically he had his own logical reasons.
Yeah, that was his goal the whole time.
Yeah.
I think he basically, his setting up Warlords might have been to get, you know, try and still make that happen in some fashion. But however it works out, we're now at the point where he does not have the luxury of a united Azeroth. So
we united without him because we united under our classes rather than our factions.
That's exactly what they said when they're talking about the defense thing. I think that might be a time for him to come back out when he's got a united force to work with. Like, he's not going to waste his time trying to convince a disjointed Alliance and Horde to work together. He's going to wait till there's somebody he can go directly to and say, okay, here's my plan. So
I'm saying is that when he shows up again, and he better show up again, he better not
hear
be
that, guys?
Just a forgotten character.
You hear that? Anne's going to get real mad if he doesn't.
So help me. When he shows up again, he better have a darn good excuse for why he was missing. Because this is all like that pivotal stuff that he was telling us about in Mists of Pandaria. There should be some kind of reason for why he was absent. Maybe even I would, as an apology, I would accept an explanation for why he wasn't involved in Warlords. Give us some kind of intriguing story surrounding that. And then I'll be okay with the fact that we haven't seen him in so long. But we better see him. I mean, you can't have this character with this tremendous amount of buildup just suddenly disappear. That doesn't make any sense. It's a waste.
You know, it's not like they've ever done that before. Oh, wait a minute. They've done that so many times. This is your chance not to do that, guys. Don't do that.
He's a phenomenal character. He's a phenomenal character. It was a good idea. It was a really interesting concept. It was really cool how they got the players involved. Doing the whole rogue legendary quest chain, doing that in Cataclysm was some of the most fun that I had in Cataclysm, because he was just such a devious little snot.
Well, and the thing that gets me too is there's also one key point that that works in this favor. His buddy is in charge of the Alliance right now.
Yeah.
His really good buddy that he spent an entire expansion essentially talking with and becoming best buds with. And I still want that buddy cop movie with the two of them. But that's a perfect opportunity. You're talking about somebody who would listen, somebody who could potentially unite. And we've already seen potentially some glimmers of that through some of the story that has come through the comics and some of the overtures that are being made, where maybe it's not necessarily the United Forces of Azeroth that he's looking to. Maybe it's the new Army of Light. And what that means, we don't know yet. We don't know what that comprises of, because there's, you know, past, future, all this wibbly wobbly stuff. But it's a great opportunity if Anduin winds up becoming like a leader of the Army of Light in some capacity. That's Rathian's perfect excuse. Here's a person who has basically what I'm looking for, who already knows who I am, who I've already made nice with and didn't eat him when I had the chance. Let's talk now. There's good opportunity here.
I'm going to be honest. I didn't play a rogue. I don't care that much about Rathian. Sorry. I get why people do, but if he doesn't show up, I won't be heartbroken. I will be a little surprised, though, like, because they did set him up pretty heavily.
They did. They spent all of Mists of Pandaria setting him up pretty heavily. And then they
I actually kind of worry that since we've seen a shift in the team, and let's be honest, the person who's behind Rathian the most is a writer, left the team to go work on Hearthstone. So, I mean, on the upside, perhaps a Rathian Hearthstone expansion. But I do worry that he's not going to show up in WoW for that reason.
I just think that would be a ridiculous waste of what is probably one of the most intriguing characters that they've come up with over the past several years. And I put Garrosh in the same tier of intriguing characters that they've come up with. Was I particularly happy with the direction of Garrosh's storyline? At the end, not quite. I think he kind of got a bad end. I don't think that was quite the resolution that I was looking for, but it was appropriate, right? It was appropriate. And he had like that full circle. I don't want to see a character like Rathian not get that full circle treatment, however that ends up ending up. But in just to address your question there directly, Captain Krogan, we haven't actually seen Khadgar and Rathian interact with each other, because Rathian was heavily involved in Mists of Pandaria, where Khadgar was absent. Khadgar came in Warlords because he had a vested interest, and he was one of the top experts on, oh, hey, that dark portal thing is doing things again. Khadgar's the guy you go to when you've got a problem with the dark portal.
Oh,
so,
yeah. Yeah, the dark portals will do that. It'll turn red and go to a different... Oh, yeah, all the time.
Yep, it'll do that.
I got a manual for that right here. Here you go.
In page 74, I need an Allen wrench and...
You guys have Goldon's skull. I need it for reasons.
I need the skull and I need an Allen wrench. And I also need a margarita, not for the dark portal, just for me.
I want to see if that comes up again, by the way.
Actually, I think Khadgar would be like a scotch drinker, if anything. But anyway, moving on, or I guess continuing the direction that we were going. We haven't really seen the two of them interact because they had two very different storylines. Are they invested in the same outcome? Yes. Have they talked to each other? No. And I don't think that Rathian would really want to talk to Khadgar. I can't really see him having any kind of an interest in old wizard dude. Like, oh, you think you know everything? Well, that's great. I was made by a Titan creation. I know lots more than you, and I really have had it up to here with your uppity attitude, Khadgar. Actually, now I really want to see them meet, because I think that they'd bicker, and it'd be really funny. But yeah, we haven't seen Rathian show up. I'm hoping that we do. Khadgar is not Rathian, if that's what you're trying to imply and or ask here. No, they are not one and the same.
It's just, we've had multiple characters have us go around gathering up powerful things over the years. If they were all the same guy, then it would be quite confusing.
It'd be a little weird. To say the very least.
I've gathered powerful artifacts from Agatha Grimtotem. She's not Khadgar, I hope.
Where's she at? I need her to come back.
Yeah, that would.
We left her on a really weird place in Cataclysm 2. If you haven't played through Thousand Needles, you should play through Thousand Needles. Anyway, moving on, there is a secondary question from Captain Krogan, and this one is also interesting. It does include zone spoilers for the Val Shirra storyline. If you haven't, for some reason, finished playing through Val'Shara. I don't know why you haven't. Please go do so. It'll take you about an hour, and then come back and resume listening to the show, because we're going to talk about this. He says, secondary question if you have time. Are there any character deaths that you think have been in error? People whose potential far exceeded their lifespan in-game. Plenty of people in Warlords come to mind. Orgrim, young, quote-unquote, Velen, all of the Warlords, and my favorite character, Gunnar, as well as some from Legion, Varian, Vol'jin, Ysera. Thanks for the show. Helps me stay awake on long road moves between army bases. Watch on, peoples. Captain Krogan. So...
I have a few, but I'll let you guys go first.
No. Go ahead, Rossi. I want to hear.
All right. Well, first off, since you already mentioned him, Garrosh. I think yes. Garrosh's death was a huge mistake. I'm going to actually say that I kind of think Warlords of Draenor even happening was a huge mistake at this point. Like, it feels like Warlords was the, oh, God, we have this amazing expansion plan, but we're not, this one's not ready. We have to get one out now. What do we do? They go to Draenor again. What? But how? Yeah, it's not blown up this time. What? But how? We got a thing. A wizard did it. We're cool. Let's just go. Push it. Because it feels like, you know.
What wizard? Khadgar. Oh, okay. That sounds fabulous.
The opening of Warlords is really good. Like, the leveling experience is really good. Then it gets to a certain point and you feel like, seriously, they just didn't have any more. But they have an expansion. They're gonna have to do this. I don't know. I don't know why. Really, compared to Legion, it really does feel lacking in several ways. But Garrosh's death, to me, is a huge mistake. It's a huge waste of a character's potential. There was a lot more Garrosh could have done. And it could have been worse. Like, he could have done worse, more evil things. He didn't have to, like, come along and save us. He could have, you know, been, like, absolutely... I totally imagine Garrosh having become fully corrupted and going to side with the Legion. I could see that happening, but he'd always think he was right. And there'd be, like, lots of character stuff you could do with it. But they could have done more than they ended up doing, which was just that fight with Thrall that was kind of didn't really work for me. I don't actually mind Varian's death. Varian's death, I don't like it as a person who plays World of Warcraft. It doesn't make me happy. I wish he was still around. But I don't feel like it was a waste. Like, I feel like it was as good a place as any to stop with him. Like, he could have lived another 40 years and done more cool stuff, and I would have thought it was fine. But I'm not... bothered by him dying. Vol'jin, I'm straight up bothered by him dying.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Vol'jin straight up didn't get to do anything. He got to be war chief and then got to do nothing. He got to do more before he became war chief than he did as war chief. There was that year and a half of Vol'jin really getting some development. He got his book. He got a lot of stuff in Mists. He got stuff before Mists. It really felt like he was stepping out onto his own, and then finally he gets war chief and then nothing, and now he's dead. And that really bothers me. There's more, but those two I'm gonna leave on those one and then see what people say, because there's one I have that's kind of a surprise, and I'm gonna wait to see if people are surprised by it.
Joe, what about you?
Honestly, out of all the ones that I was really surprised—I wouldn't say surprised, but Vol'jin is the big sticking point for me. Even if he wasn't going to be war chief, you know, have him mortally wounded and step down, there's still more that you can do with him. There's still more that he can serve and do. That's fine, but I feel like his death was I don't want to say hollow. But it was a vehicle to put Sylvanas front and center, which she didn't need a vehicle to do that. You could have just done that in a different way. Don't get me wrong. I like the Dark Lady as my war chief, but I still would have liked to seen more out of Vol'jin. I think there was more story to tell, and I think he got the raw end of the deal. Ysera was kind of a sticking point, too, because of how easily it happened. I guess is kind of the thing. Like, I understand the dragon aspects are all, like, essentially being picked off one by one, but it's like, even in their diminished form, they're still the leaders of their respective flights. They should be a little more hardy than that, and to be taken out so quickly and then make the players do it felt like it didn't serve a purpose to me, I guess would be the best way to put it. Like, it just felt like there was more that could have been done with the dragonflights finding their way in this, you know, this universe's world post being Titan charged, essentially.
Can I sidebar for a moment?
Sure.
Sidebar. It's kind of interesting that every dragon aspect that's died so far, we've been responsible for their deaths. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yep. Back to you, Joe.
I was going to point that out too, but other than that, like, I don't know. I feel that the problem that we have here is a lot of the deaths that do occur in game, I don't want to say feel hollow, but they very, very seldomly feel exceptionally satisfying. Like, with exemptions like Xavius. I felt that that was purely satisfying after eons of being tormented by
Arthas
this
felt
journey.
Good. The Lich King felt
Arthas
good.
Arthas felt good as well, because again, eons of being tormented by this figure, right? Illidan felt hollow when we first did it. There's a lot of weird little moments like that. So I could probably name a few more, but right now, out of the current list, I'm going to say that Vol'jin is probably my number one pick for, like, why did you do this?
Vol'jin is right there on my list because, like Rossi mentioned, he got so much character development before he became Warchief. Like, throughout Mists of Pandaria, I was really excited that we actually started to see Vol'jin evolve as a character, and I was really excited when they made him Warchief because I was like, oh, they're actually going to do something with this character now. Cool. I wonder what kind of war chief he's going to be. He's going to be the kind that dies very quickly, apparently. That's all he's going to do. Like, that's the only notable. He made you leader of your garrison, and then he kicked a bucket. Like,
to do another sidebar thing.
Yeah.
One of the things that really bothers me about that, too, is that there's nobody to replace him as a troll figure.
No.
Yeah, there really isn't.
Have a successor.
They don't even have a character who in the story can be our central troll.
Except, you know, maybe, I mean?
Like, there's a couple out there, but they're not like
Gadrin.
You know,
was it Gadrin?
There's Zabra Hex. There's a few others, but there's nobody that does that instant, you think troll, you think this person character.
Yeah. They don't have that figurehead.
That's all. I really wanted to say.
And the thing is like the orcs, they still don't have a figurehead at this point. Like, nobody has been really like deliberately assigned as, oh, this is the leader of the orcs.
But there's so many orcs, you know, and you know, you could always like, you can look to say Sarfang.
You could
look to Thrall. At least they're there.
With trolls, the closest one I would say is Zhentabra. But like, even then, like,
she just showed up.
Yeah. But she's the closest one of having done or accomplished anything important.
Had
right?
more than a couple of lines in game. Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, but at that point,
she
like,
has a voice. She has a voice actor, so
she does.
That puts her above anybody else, right?
But not only that, like at least, like, I don't know. I feel like they're phasing trolls out, if that makes sense. Like,
it's
to kind of piggyback off Rossi there.
Because when Karen died, it was sad. Yes. But it was reflected in game, and his son took his place, and that felt very appropriate. And the Tauren still had a leader.
And if you didn't like his son, there's always Hamul.
Yeah.
And if you want an evil one, there's Magatha.
Yeah,
there's people out there.
There was a lot of authority figures as far as the Tauren were concerned. There are a lot of authority figures as far as the orcs are concerned, but none of them have actually like stepped up. Nobody's pointed at any of them and said, yeah, that guy or that gal, they're leading the orc faction right
and
now.
I would love them to bring back the characters from Northrend, the one who killed
their
sister.
Yes.
I want to say Krenna, but I think Krenna might be the one that actually gets killed.
I think Krenna was the one that,
you know, this will be I'm gonna say this. This is my gripe. Trolls need another figurehead, or at least some importance to keep added in the story. So do gnomes. Gnomes are also in that category.
Gnomes got themselves Geblin. Geblin is awesome.
Yeah.
Geblin Mechatork is awesome. And
but if anything ever happens to Mechatork, what then?
Sooner or later, Mimiron's going to just come lead the gnomes. It's going to happen. Mimiron's been getting more and more presence in every expansion. He's in this one a lot. If you're playing a hunter there, he's all over it. Sooner or later, Mimiron's going to come say, my children, let's conquer Azeroth. And they will. And we're all going to be like I am Anne. I hate it when I saved Mimiron and now I'm a slave to the Overmind.
Gorgona was the one that was... Krenna was her sister. It was Gorgona and Krenna.
Yeah, I want to see them come back. Well, not both of them, because one of them's
Krenna,
dead.
But... Krenna's dead, but Gorgona was leading Conquest Hold. So what happened to her? We don't know.
I'd like to see her come back. She's dead now, but I liked her when we had her, the head of the Dragon Flare, the one that, you know, basically took over when we killed Warlord Gormok or whatever his name was.
Yeah.
And, you know, she of course went bad and served Garrosh, so she's gone too. There's a lot of female.
Zayla?
Yes, Zayla, Warlord Zayla.
Yeah. I think beyond the ones that we've already listed, the one that always immediately springs to mind whenever I'm asked this question is Fandral Staghelm.
Yeah, I knew
because,
you would say that.
Yeah, I think that he had like tremendous potential as an in-game villain, and that was kind of squandered, and he was just made a raid boss. But throughout the novels and the various books and the comics and everything, you kind of got the sense of Fandral as a character, but I don't think that he was ever really allowed to develop. He just kind of got stuck in.
And he had some interesting moments too.
He did. There was
a lot.
There was a lot of really interesting stuff going on with Fandral. And I mean, Fandral, you know, in Chronicle, it's revealed that he was the one that was responsible for creating the Emerald Nightmare in the first place. It was him. It was what he had done when he kind of defied the Cenarian Circle, stole a bunch of trees or branches from the World Tree and planted them over Serenite in an attempt to kind of stall the Serenite's growth, which ended up working, but at the same time, it also allowed the old gods an opening in which to get into the Emerald Dream and create the Emerald Nightmare. So that was bad, right? none of that was particularly good. But the fact that Fandral stood so directly opposite Tyrande, and even opposite Malfurion, like he and Malfurion, they would butt heads. There was a reason why he didn't ask Malfurion for his input when he took those branches and planted them over the Serenite. And it worked. It worked that we had that kind of, oh, okay, here's a dissenting opinion. We need one of those. We can't have them all the elves living in happy harmony in the trees. We need some kind of conflict there to keep things interesting. And I thought that Fandral kept it interesting. So, Rossi, I know you said that there was one that you said was like a surprise.
I don't think people will even know the character is the thing. He's okay. Relatively obscure.
Well, listed off anyway.
R'lar Fangfire.
Yes.
He's known as Alpha Prime. If you read Curse of the Worgen, he's essentially the first Worgen.
And another dissenting opinion.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. Well, here's the thing is, quite frankly, I think the Night Elves need a lot more of dissenting opinions, and I get into that some other point. But this guy, the reason I like him is he's kind of the first Worgen, except unless you count Malfurion. Malfurion is the first guy to ever develop the pack form. And the first thing he did when he used pack form was go crazy and attack Cenarius.
That did not go over well.
So Cenarius was like, what are you doing? Stop it. Get off of me. And they were like, no one should use the pack form. But R'lar was like, we're getting our butts handed to us during the war against the Satyr. I forget what it's called, the War of the Emerald Knight or something. But when they were fighting
the
Satyr.
They just called it the War of the Satyr.
Okay. When they were fighting the Satyr, they were basically not doing as well as they could have. The Satyr had, you know, all sorts of evil magic and connections to the Burning Legion, and they just fought a war with the Burning Legion, so they weren't really keen on fighting another one with them. But as a result, R'lar basically was like, hey, I've come up with this really cool new form. And Malfurion's like, it's not a new form. I used it once. We can't use it. It'll just drive you crazy. So R'lar was trying to get his friend to use it. His friend refused to use it and died because Malfurion had forbidden it. He got killed.
Arvel.
Yeah, it was Arvel. As a result, R'lar kind of went nuts. And this is how the Scythe of Alun even came to be, because Arvel's, forget her name.
Belisra.
Yeah, Belisra. Belisra was the one who helped him create the Scythe of Alun, because they got a fang of Goldrin and connected it to like a staff of Alun. And all this stuff happened. He's a character who's got connections to like the Gilneas story. He's a character who is very much connected to the early part of Night Elf story. And he's very much against Malfurion, against Tyrande to a degree, because he straight up blasphemed. Like, you know, the whole thing, he straight up, not only did he go against Malfurion, he went against the very Alun priesthood by creating the Scythe. That wasn't something they were supposed to do. That was
a very bad thing that they tried to do.
So these guys, I've always wanted to see R'lar more. He gets killed in the comic, and I think that's kind of a shame, because he was definitely a character that adds more to the story.
Well, especially because we never knew half of his motivations either, too, later on, right? Because, like, he's responsible for the Gilneas infection, isn't he?
Yeah, exactly. He's brought back. It was Archmage Arugal brought, essentially contacted the banished Worgen. The Worgen, when Malfurion beat them the first time, he had them banished to the Emerald Dream, where they were sleeping.
Can I just say that, you know, okay, Curse of the Worgen was a really good graphic novel, and if you haven't picked it up, you should pick it up. It was a good comic series. It was like a 5-issue series, but it's available in graphic novel form now. So if you haven't read it, you should pick it up, because it was just really well done and well written. But Halford Ramsey, the investigator guy from the comic, Gilnean, I kind of want to see him come back at some point. He didn't die, so this isn't a case of a character dying too early or anything. It's just, he showed up in the comic and then he disappeared. And I'd really like to see him come back again, because he was kind of fascinating.
Yeah, I can agree with that. He was definitely interesting.
And I'm
I'm the Worgen detective. I you know, I could get down with that.
Yeah. Well, he was cool. He was just a cool character. I can get behind R'hllar, because R'hllar, again, it's another one of those dissenting opinions. And I feel like the individual factions, the individual races within the factions, I feel like they're at their most interesting when there is a dissenting opinion. That's part of what made the Tauren kind of intriguing, because you had all of the tribes working together, but then you had the Grim Totem, who were like they were just sneaky and shady, and they weren't really...
Plus, they were something I've always kind of thought you'd see in a race that physically powerful.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Here's a race of people who are stronger than orcs, significantly. Like, if Cairn and Garrosh had...
Yeah, significantly.
If Cairn and Garrosh had gotten into a wrestling match, that fight would have been over in 5 seconds. Cairn would have, like, picked him up and slammed into the ground, and it would have been over. They're just much stronger, and yet they're always so big on the earth and so forth. It was nice to see Tauren like, no, we're better than everybody else. Why shouldn't we rule? I am significantly stronger than any of you. Yes, especially you, Green Boy. I could kick your butt. And dwarves? You think you're in touch with the Earth? We come from the Earth Mother. Step out. And I liked that, because they were not all goody-goody. They were straight-up mean jerks.
But you look at the races that are the most interesting. Taurens were in... The Tauren... In particular, they were interesting because they had that conflict. Dwarves suddenly got interesting when the whole thing went down with Magni, and suddenly we had Moira make a return.
Oh, yeah.
And the whole, yeah, that's when they got interesting. Night elves are interesting when they've got that internal conflict. I mean, orcs. The orcs got really fascinating when all of a sudden it was Garrosh against the rest of the combined horde, you know. It's just... It feels like that conflict needs to be there. And with the Night Elves in particular, it seems like all of the characters that presented that kind of a conflict have been taken out of the picture.
That's why I'm so glad that we kind of have Maiev back, and she's not fully... Right, but
the thing that irritates me about Maiev is that they brought Maiev back, and she appears to have, like, softened dramatically.
Has to have softened from the books.
From the books, yes, but at the same time, she presented that dissenting opinion...
I don't think she's gonna fall in line with Tauren.
I don't think we've seen enough from her yet to really make that decision.
I don't think we have either.
She was in prison, she's been beat up, she was, you know, we freed her, and then she's kind of reunited with her brother, and then that's it for right now. Right? Like
whole bit that went down where she was trying to frame the Highborn for it. Trying to frame the Worgen for the murders of the Highborn, and then she tried to kill Malfurion, and all of that in the Stormrage book was very fascinating, and if you haven't read Stormrage, you probably should. The Maiev that we saw at the end of that was kind of crazed and maddened, like she'd gone insane, and I feel like they wrote it off as her having gone mad or whatever, and they really didn't need to, because it wasn't entirely out of line for her to hold the opinions that she was holding. I mean, she thinks that Night Elves... It's the same thing with Fandral. Fandral believed that Night Elves were far superior to any other race on Azeroth, and why wouldn't he? They'd been around for thousands and thousands and thousands of years, way longer than those humans and those other people, right? And he also believed that the Night Elves should remain in isolation. Well, why wouldn't he? As soon as the Night Elves started allying with the humans and these other races, what started happening all over the place? Calamity everywhere. Maybe it would have been better had they all just stayed in the forests. You know what I mean? So it's not like his opinions or Maiev's opinions were entirely out of line. Maybe the degree with which they went out of their way to, like, strike back at Malfurion and Tyrande were kind of out of place, because, I'm sorry, you know, poisoning Malfurion to keep him trapped in the Emerald Dream forever, blah, blah, blah. Oops, oh, you're crazy. I feel like there was more there. There was more potential there that was never explored. I don't know. I've been going on forever. I'm really sorry.
Okay. Like I said, I don't think we're going to see a Maiev who is like, yes, Tyrande and Malfurion have been right all along. But we haven't gotten to see exactly where she's going to fall out.
I want
to
see her butt heads.
Yeah, I don't think there's any way to avoid it, since I doubt Malfurion has entirely forgiven that whole thing. And honestly, though, what's interesting is that we've kind of seen that the Wardens do have a separate power base.
Yeah, they do.
They have their vault in the Broken Isles. They're basically there's a way for her to continue on in Night Elf society without being forgiven for what she did. She can just say, I did what I had to, and here I am, and I've been proved right. She can hold up the Legion and say, this is the real menace, and you've done nothing to prepare for it. You know, so there's ways around it. But in general, yeah, a lot of times character death, like Tyrion is the only one I can think of where his death didn't feel like it was truncating a story, because Tyrion has felt done since ICC.
Yep, I would agree with that.
It really did, and the fact that he kind of lingered on in Cataclysm, he lingered on, but he lingered on in this state of semi-retirement that felt right. It felt right for him to be holed up in the Plague Lands, just trying to mop up the rest of the plague or whatever. Okay, that's cool. That seems like a fitting end for him.
Well, even like, I think it was you who pointed this out, but it might not have been. I don't remember who exactly, but someone pointed out that he basically said, and to find ICC, he called onto the light and said, give me this one final blessing.
Yeah.
And it did. And that's probably why it didn't save him. You know, when he's done. He did what the light needed him to do. It's time for him to move on. And a death in battle against the Legion is as good a way to go as any. How else is he going to die? Just get
Blaze
old?
Blaze of glory.
Well, no, right. I mean, he gets to become like essentially a martyr, right? He becomes a martyr for the cause. And what have we learned in all of the years of playing? We're suckers for a martyr at this point. Well, like, plus, what do we need for impetus, right?
Yeah. If you've played a paladin's like sense, especially if you play like a Rhett paladin, when you go to get Ashbringer, he isn't quite dead. Like, they find him, and he basically is like, you know, it's been out for a while, guys. Come on. He basically passes on the torch to your character, and it's a quiet little moment, and everybody's really like, you know, oh no, save the High Lord, save the High Lord, and he isn't upset. He's like, no.
Yep.
He's here. Accepted it.
Yeah, I take the blade up, do what I can't, and it works. Tyrion's ending works. That is, I feel like Varian's ending is appropriate, but I would have liked there to be more Varian. But I didn't feel that way about Tyrion. I feel like Tyrion got his moment. He got his moment atop ICC. He did the big thing that he intended to do since he started being a paladin again. You know, like the state of the Plague Lands. He finally went to the one guy who was really most responsible for it. And put that guy down. Like, I mean, with our help, obviously. But
it just felt like he had kind of a complete story where he went full, like, you know, he was the honorable paladin member of the Silver Hand, and then he got exiled, and then he was that wacky hermit dude that we found in the woods in the Plague Lands and got maggots for because he was hungry. And then we went through all the trouble, you know, we took that whole journey with Tyrion, and we followed it all the way through to its natural conclusion, and it just felt right. Varian, I don't agree that Varian should have died. I think Varian was just starting to get interesting.
Yeah.
But at the same time, if there was any way for Varian Wrynn to go, that would be the way to do it. Fighting for his life on a pile of angry demons, and hopefully he took out just as many as he could before he went down swinging.
My only gripe is I don't think Gul'dan earned that one.
I don't think he did, no.
I think giving it to him was a mistake. Like, it should have been something different, but...
Yeah, like I said, I don't like that he's dead, but I can accept it as a complete story, as an ending to the character. But with Tyrion, I feel like there was nothing more for Tyrion to do. It almost feels unfair to ask Tyrion to go now. Now he has to go through this second Legion invasion and fight that. It's like, he's done enough. He's fought enough. He's carried the standard for the class enough. It's time to move on.
It's okay, old man. You did your job. Thank you.
Hand the sword over and move on. Whereas with Varian, I didn't feel that way. But for me, of those three deaths, those three big opening deaths of the the Broken Shore, Vol'jin's is the one that bugs me the most, because there was so much more for him to do.
Yep.
I'm waiting to see more of Anduin. Now that his father is gone, I want to see what that did to Anduin. We got like a little tidbit of him in the introduction stuff where, you know, you gathered in the Stormwind throne room and they had like that whole meeting thing. You gave him the locket from his dad and all that. And that's the last we saw of him. I want to see what kind of man Anduin has become now as a result of this. And we haven't really seen much of that either. And I'm kind of waiting patiently for that one too. Maybe that would be a good way for Rathian to come back, like you were saying, Joe. Have him back and talk to... Why wouldn't he go talk to his friend? His friend's dad just died.
Well, not only that, it would also explain why we haven't really seen a whole lot of him. Like, because despite Anduin being not a frontline fighter, he's always been one that has struck me as he would be the first one to dig through the piles of rubble to save, like, you know, a people or his people or any people, really, because he holds all life sacred. And at the end of the day, he's a healer type, right? He would be tending to the wounded. I could see him running through the lines and taking care of them in the only way that Anduin would want to do. We haven't seen him do any of that. We haven't seen him on any of the battlefronts. We haven't seen anything like that, at least. And correct me if I'm wrong, because I have not been playing the Alliance side, but after he basically takes over, we don't hear anything really from him yet.
Yeah, we haven't.
Because Jen Greymane is going out there, and he's the one. Again. Sorry, what?
I'm like, it's GIF and JIF all over again.
Yeah, Gen Greymane. So he's out there. He's leading the forces. He's in the thick of it. He's out there being the general for the Alliance, essentially the commander general and whatever you want to call him. But what is Anduin doing?
I do like that Gen is getting a more active role this expansion. I really do. I appreciate seeing him in the thick of things because we haven't really seen him take any kind of active role in anything since Cataclysm. So good job. And that whole scene between him and Sylvanas in Stormheim, that was fantastic. I loved that cinematic. I loved every bit of that cinematic. It was great, but I kind of want to see more. But yeah, he's kind of filled in on that role. And I understand why, because, you know, obviously Anduin's probably grieving or whatever, but I want to see what happened to Anduin. Come on, show us some Anduin. Show us some angry vengeance, you know, single-minded vengeance driven Anduin. What is he going to do? The Legion just killed his dad. Don't tell me he's just going to hole up in Stormwind.
I don't necessarily want to see him hole up in Stormwind, but I doubt seriously we're going to get an angry Vengeance Anduin.
I know we aren't going to get like Vengeance Anduin or anything, but I can't really, I mean, he's the sort of dude who I figure, you know, you push him down, he's just going to stand up even taller. So I'm waiting for him to stand up because he got knocked way the heck down this expansion. So yeah, that was like a great couple of questions, Captain Krogan. Thanks. We're going to go ahead and move on to the next one, though. This one says, hey, Watchers, Lucas from Goldrin, Brazil here. I was wondering why Sargeras needs a portal to Azeroth. I understand that when the Titans told him about Azeroth, he didn't know where she was, so he needed a portal. After all this time, do you think that he still doesn't know, or is it just a decision made by the developers that he needs a portal so that we'd have to deal with other things first? Thanks for the great work.
No one ever said that he needed a portal because he didn't know where it was in the first place. It wasn't a question of him not knowing where it was, although he didn't at first. It's always been a question of he can't just walk around on the planet without destroying it. And we now know
he was a former Titan.
Destroy it. Yeah. Well, he doesn't want to destroy the planet. He wants to maybe kill all of us, but what's in the planet, he has definite designs on, and not to kill. He is obsessed with Azeroth.
Vested interest in Azeroth.
We also don't know Titan mechanics, I guess I would want to say, because maybe it's not necessarily that he needs it, like we said, to find where it is. Maybe perhaps the only way he can manifest and take physical form on the planet without destroying everything simply by just looking at it. And like you said, we always known that, like, he wants us dead. We don't know what his designs are with the planet yet, if he's going to purge it or destroy it. We have the initial idea that he wants to destroy it, but maybe that's not the case anymore.
Well, there's specific text when some of the artifacts that indicate Sargeras's goals for Azeroth are much less destroy the planet and much more something else. The one in question is the Scepter of Sargeras, the warlock artifact. Mm-hmm. Has some text that basically indicates that Sargeras is a creepy dude. Let's put it that way.
Well, Sargeras, yeah, he's fallen in love with the planet. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's some creepy dude-ness going on here.
Well, and not only that, but if Azeroth's supposed to be the best weapon against the Void, and the Void is ultimately Sargeras's enemy, then why not try to raise the weapon on your side? Right. I mean, it makes sense to me.
It's still a little creepy. But, I mean, if you want to look at it from a different direction, Sargeras, even when Sargeras came down to fight Aegwynn way back when, it wasn't Sargeras, it was an avatar of Sargeras. It was this thing that was kind of imbued with his spirit or what have you. I feel like, much like the Titans themselves. They couldn't walk on Azeroth, so they created the Titan Forge to do the work for them. Amon-Thul kind of almost wrecked the planet because he reached down, grabbed an old god, and tried to rip it from the world's surface. They're huge. The Titans are gigantic, and Sargeras was a Titan, so he's just as gigantic as they ever were, maybe even more so. Who knows what the foul magic did to him? Maybe it made him beefier. We don't know. But that portal is needed because he can't just step on the world. If he steps on the world, it's just going to shatter like an egg. I imagine that we don't have like any kind of direct scale comparisons between a Titan and a planet, but I keep imagining like one of their feet is the size of, I don't know, the entirety of Kalimdor.
Well, if you look at it this way, we know that when Amon-Thul scooped out Yashaj to rip it out of the planet, that's at least the size of his hand is the size of the original Well of Eternity. At least that big. If it wasn't just him plucking it out with two fingers. You know what I'm saying?
Like, at the minimum. Imagine him just, like, pinching it to pick it up.
At the minimum, he can stick his hand into a planet and scoop out a hole as big as the original Well of Eternity, which was like an ocean in the middle of the ancient Kalimdor. At the most, that's like a couple of his fingers just kind of touching it. Going, oop, popping a blackhead on the planet. Sort of.
Gross!
Yeah, gross. But
apt.
Yeah, very gross, but they're the old gods. They're not exactly nice things.
That's actually like a pretty apt analogy there.
So either way, at the minimum, they're so big that they could, if they stood on Kalimdor, they could probably reach out and touch the moon. And that's a small estimate based on like the idea that it was an entire hand and not just a couple fingers. So the scale is ridiculous. And the thing about that is, like, when he came through as the Avatar was, like, monumentally huge. And that was just, like, something he made so he could come through. His lieutenants, who are not Titans, have to use portals to get through.
The Eredar.
Yeah. Like, I'm trying to think of, like, the Archimonde and Kil'jaeden, when they come through, are massive. Have you ever seen those guys? And they have to use portals. They're not even Titans. They're just Eredar. So,
they're Eredar that have been imbued with fel magic. And are they the size of Felon? No, they're way bigger.
Yeah.
So that's the other thing that kind of supports the idea that Sargeras, even as the size of a Titan, maybe becoming corrupt, embracing the fel, becoming the leader of the Burning Legion, maybe he's bigger than a Titan ever was. And that makes him phenomenally huge. Just gigantic. Just like maybe we're the size of his eyelashes. I don't know.
Yeah, but also to be considered is the fact that the portal is mostly there for his various minions to come through, more than for himself. We don't even know if he intends to physically come here, but they need the portal to get through because otherwise they have to travel through the Great Dark Beyond, and that takes a very long time. There's a reason people don't just show up. When you close the portal, that effectively seals them off. That's why the portal network is so important. That's why Illidan wanted the Sargeras Keystone. Because there's no way for him to mount an offensive without it. So the portal isn't just about Sargeras finding the planet. It's also about, even if you know exactly where the planet is, if you have to travel through space to get there, it would be like, imagine if we decided we were going to like go to war with a planet 50,000 light years away from here, and we had no other way to get there but to travel through space. It would take us 50,000 years to get there.
That planet would be gone by the time we got to it.
No, it would still
just
be there.
Just through evolution.
Probably, yeah, the guys were mad at. We went extinct 25,000 years ago, and now the snail people live here. Oh, okay.
So I guess we just need to turn around and go home then. There's no home to go to.
And you're all the people that are coming to wage the war are, in fact, your descendants. Now, you know, it's just, we don't know enough to really make a determination on this, but it's very unlikely that Sargeras is just, you know, sitting around going, oh, if only I knew where Azeroth was. I doubt that that's a problem at this point.
Joe, do you have any thoughts on this?
No, I mean, that pretty much well covers it. Like, that's like I said, it's, we don't understand Titan mechanics. It could be something that has to do with how he manifests. It could be more that he needs it to get more of his forces in there quickly, because I mean, we don't know how many ships they have. Like, yes, yeah, some of them can travel through the void on ships. We also don't know how long it takes to get there. What arrived at Azeroth could have been sent off thousands and thousands of years ago. We don't know. So I mean, there's a number of things. It'll be interesting to see. I don't think it's developer based. I think it's more, this sounds really cool, let's figure out why this is cool.
Okay, well, our next question, which is probably going to be our last question, because this one is actually a pretty weighty question, and I have a feeling we're going to be talking about it for a while, is from Captorian, who is a Guardian Lockedon from Nordrasil, U.S., who says, "Hi, gang. It's much harder to keep these questions short than you would think, but here goes. What is the natural state of the cosmic forces and their agents? Is it balance or domination? The old gods corrupt world souls and Titan forged order, as well as the Emerald Dream and at least one dragon aspect, life, yet they don't seem to act against light directly. The army of light shows up and they're not battling the void, but rather the Legion, Disorder. It was Sargeras that killed the other Titans, not the Agents of Disorder, and he was set off by the Old Gods infestation, not the Nathrezim. If shadow can't exist without light, for example, can the cosmic forces and their agents even act against their opposites? Perhaps it comes down to this. What do the Void Lords want? Is it the intrusion of the Void into the spheres of order and life, the goal and purpose of the Void, or has something upset that natural order?" And that's a mouthful. So go ahead, you guys. What do you think?
All right. Since Joe isn't talking. I think first off that trying to figure out what the Void Lords want is inherently trying to ascribe to them motivations that would make sense to us, but they don't make sense to us. They are devoid of motivations that we would comprehend. That's why they cause madness and their minions cause madness. They are not beings that exist as we understand existing.
Trying to comprehend what they are up to induces madness.
Yeah, because they're not beings. They are like the opposite of beings. They lack everything that we consider like a thing. They twist reality just in order to try and make our universe more hospitable to them, makes it less hospitable to us. We understand it less. It follows, you know, things we may intend for it to make sense less. They don't even die. Like, when you kill an old god, even when the old god is dead, it's flat out dead, it can still affect the world and think and talk. And I'm not even talking about, like, you know, C'Thun or Yogg-Saron, both of which we've quote-unquote killed. I mean Yzaj, who got ripped out of the planet and torn into chunks by a Titan, and the chunks got scattered across the continent. And even then, even with it deader than dead, no coming back, no new Yzaj, the Shah exists because of it, the heart could still act. It had to be sealed away. They're not. So that's your first problem, is trying to understand where they exist in the order of the cosmos, because they are not part of it. They don't belong here. They warp the universe just by being in it. As far as, like, you know, can order, you know, attack disorder, can life attack death, can light directly attack shadow, I see enough evidence of the things existing in both balance and imbalance to think that there's no imposed cosmic order to this situation. These forces exist and they are all in contention. And they're not just in contention with the one on the opposite side of a chart. They're in contention with each other. Sometimes they contend through violent conflict. Sometimes they contend through mutually, you know, beneficial means, but they all contend all the time. They're all, because that's what makes up reality as we understand it. It's the various forces expressing themselves that makes reality exist, makes the worlds exist, makes the spirits exist. The balance is definitely on a different scale. It's not like there is a force of balance that imposes it. It's just that they tend to find a balance, and that's how existence is in the first place. If there's no balance, existence can't be maintained. But this is just me speculating. I don't think there's ever been anything in game about this at all.
Joe, what do you think?
It's kind of one of those weird things where you can kind of make parallels to quantum physics and as we understand it in real world, right? And Rossi kind of touched on that. Everything acts upon everything in a system. It doesn't necessarily mean that it is perfectly balanced, and there could be things that will cause things to overtake or operate in cycles. And that could very well be it. The problem is we don't know, because we're such small infinitesimal specks compared to the size of the system. For all we know, like, the natural state could be perfect order. But I don't think that's necessarily the case, because if that was the case, the Titans wouldn't go around ordering things. They wouldn't be trying to bring order. I think that there's an ebb and flow to sort of the universe where, you know, maybe spirit overtakes fire or fire overtakes life, and it goes through this whole big cycle. And that's kind of what I almost want to say, that I think the Titans did this to themselves and did it to us by forcing order in a system that didn't necessarily need it. And I don't know what the natural state of that is, because that order was sort of imposed upon it. I don't want to say chaos is the natural order, but it, for lack of a better term, we took everything that was pushing against itself and finding this sort of this equilibrium and said, heck with it. And, well, this planet looks like it needs to be reordered. Oh, this planet needs to be reordered. This planet needs to be reordered. Next thing you know, the entire universe is being reordered, and that throws everything out of whack. It creates an imbalance that allows the void people to sort of, the void entities to sort of rush in when maybe they weren't going to be able to before. It's an interesting question, because at the end of the day, because we don't know how things were before the Titans, I don't think we'll ever know exactly how that was.
I think that I'm trying to figure out how to phrase this in a way that makes sense. I think that the natural state of the cosmic forces, it isn't balance or domination, it's conflict. That's the natural state. They're constantly coming into conflict with each other, and they're doing that, and in doing that, they achieve a sort of balance. Like, they're fighting, and because they're fighting, there's a balance to it. One side might rise against the other, but the other one will always come back and rise again, you know, and it just goes back and forth and back and forth. And that seems to be the natural state of things anyway. If it's not, you know, if there's not direct cross conflict, like, you know, the void isn't necessarily directly fighting the light and vice versa, the void is more trying to leech its way into the universe, and maybe the light is kind of trying to protect that and keep that from happening, but not so much, because it's part of the natural order of things. Whereas, you know, you've got Sargeras working on the side of disorder, and he's trying to fight back against the void, but it's not like a direct confrontation. It's not like a direct cross confrontation on a chart, like Rossi was saying. That's not what it is. It's just conflict in and of itself, which I guess that kind of falls under the whole, hey, it's called Warcraft for a reason. I don't know. I can't think of a clearer way to put it than that. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes sense. Yeah. It's comprehensible.
Okay. He does have a bonus question here, and the bonus question is it on us as creatures who bridge all these forces to determine or police this, whatever the natural order happens to be? If so, I fear that eliminating the Legion completely will deprive us of a tool to combat the void. Thanks and happy holidays, Captorian. What do you guys think?
It's up to us to fight so we don't die. Anything else than that is not a concern to me playing the game. I don't think mortal creatures have the luxury of worrying about, you know, oh, if we stop the Legion, then what about the Void Lords? The Legion's going to kill us.
Yep.
If we don't stop them. So we stop them, and then we worry about the Void Lords. We can fight them after we're done with this one. Because the Void Lords seem perfectly content to sit back and wait to see who comes out on top. As long as that's the case, it's like, as long as the guy who's thinking the enemy of my enemy is my enemy's enemy thing, that's great. If you're over there not doing anything, then I will worry about the immediate fight and then move to you when you're next. You can get in line. As long as that's the case, yeah. So I don't think we have to worry about the Legion as a tool against the Void. I think that the Void will fight it when it comes time to. Certainly seems to be the kind of thing we would fight. We have fought before, so.
Well, and it kind of goes back to what I was talking about a few episodes ago, where we've never had a period of peace. We've never had that luxury of sitting back. Everything has been one massive tragedy to the next massive tragedy to the next massive tragedy. And whether that's by design or what, I don't know. I'm talking about like story wise, not game wise, because we all know that game wise, of course, it's got to be like that. But we don't have time to philosophize about any of this stuff. We are dealing with all of these threats immediately. We never had a chance to stop to think, oh, you know what, maybe we shouldn't kill Garrosh and find out what's happening there, because we're depriving ourselves of a very useful tool potentially. Maybe we should make friends. We didn't have time because he was too busy trying to murder us. We didn't have time with the Warlords of Draenor because, again, they were quote-unquote trying to murder us. Same thing here with the Legion. They're trying to murder us. Survival trumps everything. It always will. We don't want to die. We don't want our planet to go destroyed or get burned into ash or whatever we think is going to happen. We want to keep going on, and that's going to keep us kind of going. We don't know what that's going to bring after that. We don't really have time to think of the consequences. We'll keep fighting, though. Like, that's the thing. We're going to keep fighting. We seem to be doing okay so far. So when it comes time to fight the Void, maybe we should have kept the Legion around. That would have been useful, but maybe not. Maybe not even necessary. Everything we've been told so far has been, well, you can't defeat the Lich King, and then everything's going to go really, really bad, and then you're going to have to deal with that. Well, we did that anyway, and then we still persevered. Or you know, you can't dismantle the Warlords, because then you won't have that army accessible to you. And, well, we did that anyway, and we're still going strong. So, yeah, I mean, it's just, we're going to keep moving from one conflict to the other, and we're not going to stop to think about it.
I feel like we're tiny reflections. Like, if the natural state of the cosmic forces is conflict, we're tiny reflections of that. So we're constantly in a state of conflict. You know, like the Pandaren, and all through Mists of Pandaria, they were like, why do we fight? It's in our blood. Da-da-da-da. It is, technically speaking. It's just something that we have to do. It's part of the whole universal balance, order, what disorder, whatever you want to call it, that natural state of the universe. I also find it interesting that we're so tiny, we're such specks on this whole grand scale of cosmic design, and yet we're fighting this cosmic war against something that is so much larger than we are, and it's because we're the only things left fighting on that side. The Titans are gone, so we're the only things that are left as that kind of a natural enemy, as it were. And I find that interesting. I don't know. So yeah, those were some weighty questions, Skeptorian, and I don't know if we answered them sufficiently for you, but we had fun talking about it. Anyway, I don't know about you guys. I did.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
It is why we're here.
Well, that's going to kind of wrap us up for this round of Lore Watch. And again, if you have any questions for Lore Watch, you can go ahead and email those to podcast@blizzardwatch.com. Just make sure that you put Lore Watch in the subject line so that we know that it's intended for this podcast and not the Blizzard Watch podcast. Speaking of which, Blizzard Watch is made possible due to the generous contributions at patreon.com/blizzardwatch. And your continued support means that this podcast site and community is able to thrive and grow. Blizzard Watch supporters enjoy exclusive benefits like early access to the podcast, a better chance at having your question answered on our podcast or the queue, and an ads-free site experience. And for you guys, the listeners of Lore Watch or Blizzard Watch, whichever podcast, you know, if you're supporting us or not, it doesn't matter. We've actually got an offer for you. Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service. You can sign up with them at blizzardwatch.com/audible. Several of the questions that we addressed today, we mentioned a lot of Blizzard titles. I know we mentioned Wolfheart. We mentioned Stormrage. If you want to know more about interstellar travel, Illidan by William King is another good one. All of these books are available. They have audio versions that are available on Audible, and you can get them as your free book download. So if you want to sign up, that's blizzardwatch.com/audible. I guess for my closing thoughts question for you guys, what I'm wondering, and it's kind of what Captorian asked here, but I'm going to ask it fairly directly. Do you think that it's right that we're trying to wipe out the Burning Legion?
That's Rossi. Such a loaded question.
Rossi, go ahead and
yeah,
go.
Yes, absolutely. Got no problems with it. It's not like the Legion always existed. It's not like they provide a universal function. Nope. Kill them. Kill them all. Kill Sargeras, too, while we're at it. It's not like other Titans haven't died. Yeah, no problem.
Joe, what do you think?
From the pure stance of survival and our future and Azeroth's future, yes, it is the right thing to do.
Okay. Do you think that there are going to be any kind of lasting implications towards wiping out one of these so-called cosmic forces?
Yeah.
I think you're kind of assuming a lot if you think we're going to do it.
Look, we have all of these powerful things just like falling out of our pockets now.
they got a lot of people. We could literally kill our own weight in demons, and they'd have like that much more demons just, you know, on standby. These guys are not in danger of losing this fight is the problem.
So you think we can stall them, but we can't really kill them?
Not directly. Not unless something changes.
Okay.
I think that even if we do, we're just going to deal with whatever the consequences are after that, just like we do everything else. Because like I said, we ain't got time to worry.
World of Warcraft, there's always something terrible going on. All right, and with that in mind, thank you very much for listening, you guys, and we will see you in 2 weeks.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.